If Congress fails to back up the president in his monetary program, he blustered, I predict a revolution in this country, which will make the French Revolution look silly. I know the pulse of the nation, he further declared. And I know Congress will do nothing but say, Mr. Roosevelt, we follow. God is directing President Roosevelt, he added. He is the answer to our prayers. In his sermons, the leader of America's religious left sounded like he'd borrowed Mussolini's talking points. Our government still upholds one of the worst evils of decadent capitalism, namely that production must be only at the profit for the owners, for the capitalist, and not for the laborer. So how did Coughlin suddenly become a right-winger? When did he become persona non grata in the eyes of liberal intellectuals? On this, the historical record is abundantly clear. Liberals started to call Coughlin a right-winger when he moved further to the left. This isn't nearly as contradictory as it sounds. Coughlin became a villain in late 1934 almost solely because he decided that FDR wasn't radical enough. FDR's less than fully national socialist policies sapped Coughlin's patience, as did his reluctance to make the priest his personal Rasputin. Still, Coughlin managed for most of the year to qualify his support, saying things like, more than ever, I am in favor of a New Deal. Finally, on November 11, 1934, he announced he was forming a new Lobby of the People, the National Union for Social Justice, or NUSJ. He issued 16 principles of social justice as the platform for the new super lobby. Among its articles of faith, that every citizen willing to work and capable of working shall receive a just and living annual wage which will enable him to maintain and educate his family. I believe in nationalizing those public necessities which by their very nature are too important to be held in the control of private individuals. I believe in upholding the right of private property, yet of controlling it for the public good. I believe not only in the right of the laboring man to organize in unions, but also in the duty of the government which that laboring man supports to protect these organizations against the vested interests of wealth and of intellect. I believe in the event of a war and for the defense of our nation and its liberties, if there shall be a conscription of men, let there be a conscription of wealth. I believe in preferring the sanctity of human rights to the sanctity of property rights. I believe that the chief concern of government shall be for the poor, because, as is witnessed, the rich have ample means of their own to care for themselves. The following month, Coughlin issued another 7 principles to elaborate exactly how the NUSJ would combat the horrors of capitalism and modern commerce. These were even more explicitly anti-capitalist. Thus, it was the government's duty to limit the profits acquired by any industry. All workers must be guaranteed what we would today call a living wage.